Hey, it's Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. I'm from The Five, but I call it The One. Originally called it The One because I thought it was a joke because it was a play on The Five. But then I realized The One is not about me. It's about the guest. The One is the person who stands out, who's kind of the oddball, the square peg, the mad genius, who's not like anybody else. If you look at the guests that I've had in the past, they're all interesting and different because they're not like anybody else. And my next guest fits that to a T, Ariel Pink. I think he's a musical genius, and I don't want to embarrass you by saying that, but Ariel, you are, in my opinion.
I'm also a one, I think.
You are a one? On a scale from one to what?
Well, I think, with regards to lives, like, I think I'm either a one or a nine. Yeah. I'm either my first life or my ninth.
I see. That's an interesting question because, like, I think about that. I don't know where you are religiously, but I believe that when you die, because there's no – you can't feel time and there's all these parallel universes, the odds are that when you die, your consciousness will come back. But it would be the same as death because you don't know you're alive again, correct?
I sort of feel that way. I mean it's – I wonder what I believe about it, but it's like, do you believe in reincarnation? And well, sort of. I think that like if you have it all figured out in one life and you sort of get it figured out, mm-hmm. and die happy or something like that, maybe that's the goal or something, where you can just sort of like let go and there's like, you've made it to the end of your timeline, lifetime, nine lives, whatever the hell.
I just don't know, like, if you like, the whole point of reincarnation is to give you comfort that you're going to live again, but if you have no memory of the previous life, then it's just like dying. It's actually just as bad because you start over and you could be in a worse condition or a worse situation. Like, instead of being Ariel Pink, you could be me.
That should let you know that, like, you're still working it out.
Yes.
And I will keep that in mind. I might be you and I might not even know it yet.
Yes. Well, you know what? I have this belief that at some point we will be able to identify as other people, because now we can identify as different genders and different races. If I wake up tomorrow morning and I decide I'm Ariel Pink, how are you going to defend yourself if I believe, self-identify as you?
Well, I kind of think that that's the future of Airbnb, actually.
Really?
Because I think that they're going to be able to rent out people's bodies, and you're going to be like I'm going to be able to like actually hang out in your body, and nobody's going to know any different, and then we're going to be hanging out, and all of a sudden your friends are going to be like, you're acting kind of weird, man, like what's going on with you, and then our friends are going to be the same friends, so they're going to be like, wait a second, Ariel, is that you again? And
yes.
I'm just like, fooled you.
Yeah. Yes.
And I'll be somewhere actually like in some nether region. Like,
yes.
Just, you know, like I didn't pay my rent or something like that. And I'll have to wait till there's an availability in my own body again.
I have friends who do that with Airbnb. They rent out their apartment and they sleep on the couch while the people are staying there.
That's a good racket.
It's a good racket. You know what it does? It pays for the drugs. It does. It's like if you have it, that's what you
drug
do.
Dealer.
If you live in New York and you don't have and you can't make your rent, you rent it out and then that pays for whatever. And you try to and you explain to these people that you'll just be in the other room.
Let's not tell the landlords about this because I think that, you know, they might want to get in on it.
So how is life? I haven't heard any bad things about you in a week or two. And that's usually unusual for Ariel Pink because it's almost like a weekly occurrence. You're in the news. You're either pissing off Madonna or Grimes or somebody. But you've been pretty
talk to me in a week.
Yes,
I think this might be the kickoff. Yes. Inaugural event.
Doing Fox News is always helpful for a musician, I find, because I think musicians are so open-minded that when they hear that you're on Fox News, they go, "That's great. That's wonderful." Did you ever get any blowback for doing Red Eye?
No, I don't think most of my audience who hates me actually knows or pays attention to Fox News.
Well, you know what was great? We met because I started following you on Twitter maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And you said, oh, great, Gutfeld's following me on Twitter. And I go, how does this guy know me? Because I have all your records.
Well, you said something that like somehow I got I got included in some sort of tweet. You maybe like
yes.
I caught you.
Yeah.
Retweeting something that I said, and I was just like, no, blank.
Yeah.
So then I was just and then it was just like, you know, it was love at first sight.
Not to plug Red Eye, but Red Eye was a bug lamp for oddballs and people who don't fit in. So I always found people like I shouldn't be surprised that you liked it because you are the target audience. That show was a weird show, and you're not a normal. You're a free thinker in the way I see it. Is that's why you get into trouble? You air out your thoughts.
Not anymore.
No.
But yeah, that was, you know, they usually say that expressing yourself is a good sort of endorphin release, and
yeah. Have you been following the Dream Machines controversy? Here's a band that aired out their thoughts. You air out your thoughts. The moment you air out your thoughts, if you violate any orthodoxy in this case the music not music industry but music journalism, that is a true orthodoxy. It's like you have to abide by a certain kind of belief system. You're screwed.
Yeah, because you're like into telling the truth and stuff like that, and that's going to get you into trouble. You're supposed to supposedly express yourself freely. That's what you do. Honesty is a good policy, blah, blah, blah. But then since you're being honest, everybody kind of jumps on you and you really shouldn't be honest is really what the message is.
That's the lesson. The lesson is that – On a particular set of issues or anything about life.
I mean, yeah, parents know this very well. They cannot be 100% forthright to their kids about what their history is with acid or with extramarital affairs or whatever. You cannot condone these things.
Right.
They have to stay, and the kids are like, "Why? you were totally. You're a hypocrite." And it's like, "Well, no, there's a reason, and you just don't understand it yet." But that's what I had to learn. I had to learn that, like, basically, I can't be honest all the time, and it's not a virtue anyway. To certain people, maybe it is, but
I think the opinions that you have are things that come off as shocking until you explain them. Like, we had a long talk about that radical Christian group.
Westboro?
And how you explain the reason why you admire them is because they are testing – they're violating the boundaries of free speech, and they're testing it, and that's an interesting thing. And I thought that was like a – that was like a very – like it was such a unique way of looking at it.
Yeah, I thought they were model Americans because they were really just speaking their thoughts. They're saying everybody's going to go to hell. It's
yes.
Like if you don't believe in hell, then what harm does it do? It's just, you know, like in one ear out the other. Let them believe what they want.
Yes.
But since all these people secretly do believe that they're going to go to heaven, they don't like to be reminded that they're going to go to hell by somebody, and that's considered hate speech. And so I kind of think it's like that's why they were all lawyers too, and they were able to capitalize on people's weak spots and, you know, get some physical – you know, I think they were trying to push people to physically attack them, which would sort of bolster their point.
Yeah, they were definitely on the outer edges. It's interesting because I think about how the world has changed, and if you think about Frank Zappa or you think about Captain Beefheart, that era, they could not. I don't think they could probably. Well, none of Zappa's music could probably be played right now. Like if you look at like Shake Your Booty, the kind of infantile.
Oh, Bobby Brown.
Yeah, Bobby Brown. None of that stuff. Because it's highly sexual. It plays on racial stereotypes. And it's just, you know what it is? It's like puberty humor.
Yeah.
Like,
no. And that's who listens to it.
Yes.
Is like 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds.
Yes. That's where I found it when I was a kid. 13, Zappa.
Exactly. No, and they still do listen to it because it's the only thing that like that's nasty on the airwaves.
I can't believe he would write entire songs about like disgusting sex, and I'm like, I don't even know what he's talking about, but I knew that it was dirty.
It was brown.
Yeah, that's all it was. Why do you think? Like, why is their music? I wanted to talk to you about this because I always find it interesting the desire to sing or express or make noise that's beyond just strictly communication. And my feeling is that it has something to do with mathematics, like solving some weird mathematical problem that you don't know that's in your head, and it forces you to do this. But I was wondering if you ever think about when you're writing something or doing something, why you're doing this.
There's a Freudian analysis, mm-hmm. which nobody wants to hear. I think that
what is a Freudian analysis?
Well, I think you could say that it's related to the tool making part of the male side of the brain,
or right?
It's essentially the equivalent of jiggling your in front of a guy,
right,
and seducing him with some sort of song and dance.
Peacock feathers.
Peacocking is between other males.
Right. Okay.
So it's more of jiggling of the. It's seducing them mm-hmm. with their own weakness, essentially.
Right.
It's a dazzle thing, and it's an emotional thing. So it's very much tied to the female, the animus or whatever, mm. whatever you call it, anima or whatever. I don't know, but yeah. But I think that it is a sort of mysterious, magical thing that that goes back a very long way, and it's probably like making music. Music probably preceded a language in a lot of ways.
Maybe it did. Maybe that was what led to language. I'm looking at it in reverse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they say when they saw those handprints on the walls, mm-hmm. that was the beginning of art. Of like
right.
you know, and it, I mean, they were just trying to get out of the cave. You know, I mean, but somehow some people visited that cave and they read it as a, you know, somebody like, you know, writing 1, 2, 3, 4 days, 5 days. I don't know.
You know what's I always wonder this, and I know there's an obvious answer to this, and it's always boredom, but I don't think it is. If – let's say you have a song like Round and Round, classic song from before today, right?
Right.
Yeah. An amazing song. So you first hear that song in the beginning of summer, and you play it every single day. And the song never changes, but over time – your response to it changes. So it's like you can't get enough of this song. I'm like this with Honey Bucket from the Melvins. I play that song all the time. But over time, you become – something changes. The novelty wears off, and you do this with every song. A song that you fall in love with, you play incessantly. Why?
I love that.
Why is it that the song doesn't change? It's not the song's fault. What is happening to your brain that is saying – it's not giving me the same thing anymore.
I'll explain it like this. I'm a junkie for when I'm listening to something I've never heard before. Mm-hmm. The song is like I've never heard. I don't know where it's going to go. I'm listening to it for the first time. I still haven't. If I haven't completely latched onto the changes and know them, what's coming up, I can mm-hmm. – I sort of like I'm getting an orgasmic rush because
right.
I can't sort of anticipate those things. But even if I can anticipate it, and it's sort of like it's like just a quick unexpected
– chord change.
Chord change,
yeah.
And it's just sort of like you love it. You know that you're going – when once you know the song
mm-hmm. –
and you're going to know it by heart. It's going to be your favorite song. You know it before it's happening. So your mind is blowing.
Yes.
While you're listening to it in real time, you're like, I can't wait till I know this song.
No, isn't that weird? That is the most religious experience.
That's what it is.
And yeah.
It's akin to like doing drugs in a weird way, because I don't support doing those things, but definitely like the novelty and of the experience, or like, you know, hearing a joke for the first time and you know, busting out laughing, but then not, you know, ever – but busting out laughing ever again whenever you hear it.
It always feels like when that intermediate period you're talking about, when you're discovering something and it happens and your brain's going, this is going to be great even the next time, and it's going to be great the next time. And you're a kid and you're playing the song over and over again, and then there's that point it kind of like – it doesn't happen, and that's like human life. It's like its existence.
Do it again, Dad.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Yeah, yeah.
Say that again. Say the funny thing again.
Yeah.
And then they say it again, and then they say it again, and then you're just like, say it again, Dad.
Yeah.
Say it again.
And it's wearing off.
They're like, he's going to bed. Okay, that's fine.
I do think it's like doing, maybe not math, but like a puzzle. It's like when you were a kid, right, and you did like, what is it called? Cross. where you'd look for letters, and your brain would feel good when you saw a pattern in the letters. Like, you know them, you'd look for words.
Crossword puzzles?
Are they called acrostics? The ones where you look for words in a bunch of letters.
Oh, right.
Word search. And so when you'd find something, you'd see it. You'd have this aha feeling. I often think that that's like music is doing that, and I'm wondering what is it in the brain, or what is it? Maybe it's just not – it's something that's more universal that we all have. Like you have it. We both have that feeling.
It's the pattern-making part of the brain that's uniquely human, at least. I don't know, but it's not uniquely human because birds, they speak to each other with their songs, and they can recognize each other that way. So it's something a little bit mixed, but it's like we really latch onto the pattern part very quickly. And I think it has something to do with the fact that we have so much time as fetuses outside of the womb, and we have experiences in the world that basically we have a lot of time seeing the world and getting that kind of experience while our brains are developing. So we don't even know how to like turn it off.
Yeah.
We can't go back and get to that source moment. It's like it gets stamped in there before we have any chance to scratch it out, you know, and correct it.
You know, the one thing that I don't know if you ever noticed this, and you maybe you do, but like when somebody like in a movie, they can take anything that is pretty banal, like two people walking across the street, and they've just like let's say they've shoplifted, and they're what? But if you put music to it, it becomes something like heroic, and I always find that somewhat destructive. It's like you can make almost any behavior look amazing with music.
You can make a porno terrible without sound. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's just it doesn't get you off the same way. I think that's why people scream. My girls scream especially to just get us to sort of just like take us to the brink. You know, like guys just get so much more aroused when there's sound.
Noise. Yeah, it's just.
I wonder if people do it with earplugs on sometimes.
What I don't, but it's like weird. It's like when they combine music and slow motion in movies. I feel like I'm being cheated. Do you know what I mean?
You're being manipulated.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being manipulated when they slow it down and they add music. It's like so this scene could not have survived without.
Also, when they like when they zoom in on a person's face,
yes,
and stuff like I mean, like you couldn't see that.
Yeah.
when they did the play.
Yeah,
the guy had to scream and shout and do some operatic gesture that was like as if, for you to pay attention to him on screen. So, but now the director is just like basically like zoom in on the person's face and then you see little he just basically twitches like in his eye and you know exactly what he's feeling. It's just like that's just so manipulative. So,
when did all this start? I'm trying to think. It's like I remember like in the 80s or 70s, like Bad to the Bone would play when somebody would walk into a bar. You know, it's like that's when you knew. Oh yeah, this is cool. But it would if without Bad to the Bone,
Roadhouse.
It would just be a guy going into a bar. But now it's something else. But I guess it started with maybe James Dean and
With movies maybe.
Yeah. And the song. What's the song? Oh geez, it was the first instrumental chord. I can't think of it. It's going to drive me crazy. Who's a great guitarist from the 50s?
Link Wray.
Yes, Link Wray. And I can't remember the name of the song now, but it's Link Wray.
Bad to the Bone? No.
But you know what I mean. It's the instrumental. It's the most famous like instrumental. And I'm sure the people listening to this, when they listen to it, will go, you idiot. It's –
yeah. Anyway.
Speaking of music, your album, because we're running out of time and I want to talk about it. The title's called Dedicated – by the way, I've listened to the whole album like 16 times. It's fantastic. As always, you do whatever you want and it always works out. It's always surprising and interesting and fun.
For the same reason that that you have that traumatic experience of not remembering or what you were talking about. Over time, you really can't like – it can't be anything else. So you basically get used to it. Maybe you just get frustrated with trying to wish it was something else. And then eventually it works. It works better.
Yeah.
you get with it. And yeah, that's kind of how I felt with it. I didn't know it was a record until it was a record. And then now it's
– Time to Live is an amazing song. The album's called Dedicated to Bobby Jameson. Do you want to explain the origin of the title?
Sure. Bobby Jameson Well, that's kind of like too long for now. I love that you saved that question for the last one.
And you have 10 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. But if you should look up Bobby Jameson's blog. He's dead now, but he's only been dead a couple of years. He, at the end of his life, he managed to write an unpublished autobiography, more or less, that is his blog. And I was really just taken with his writing voice. Mm-hmm. His story. I mean, he's grabbing you by the collar and he's saying, like, hey, look, man, this is what happened to me. It's not like he's like...
Did you know him at all?
No, but I had a friend, Gittle Partridge, who knew him, and she first pointed me to his YouTube page, where it was just him like on his webcam kind of like mm-hmm. discussing his grievances. And then I was just like, oh, how did I not hear about this guy? And apparently everybody and their mother was into him. Like 7 years ago, you know,
yeah.
I just missed that. I must have been traveling, but yeah, you know, Brian Jonestown like did a song, a cover of one of his songs. He sort of came out of the woodwork after 30 years of being assumed to be dead, presumed dead, but it's just because he wasn't pursuing his self-destructive, the tragedy of his life is just that he was just basically having doors closed from the get-go. It was like kind of like he was supposed to be – he was poised to be a rock star at mm-hmm. age 17, but like everything – they tested the 60s out on him. It was like, in 63 in L.A., and they there was no Summer of Love. It just went straight to Helter Skelter. And
right.
There's no hope. Yeah. He was too bitter – too early, and
he was too smart.
He was like a guy that was like, for all intents and purposes, just a crackhead that's on the street that's just mm-hmm. talking to himself, like going, they didn't pay me, and then you know, you're just like, please go away, sir, you know, and he was just like this raving guy, but like you don't expect those kinds of people to ever, to 30 years after the fact, you don't expect like a crackhead to like sort of like. Have perfect memory mm-hmm. of what he was thinking when he was a crackhead and be able to sort of
right.
put it down on paper. Perfect, because like the person he's describing is like just like a basket case
yeah.
for so long, and it's but his voice is just so clear, his memory is so clear, it's such an interesting perspective, and I was so taken with it.
Well, I'm gonna have to go search this out and listen to everything if there's stuff on YouTube. Is the album out yet?
No, it's. I think it's out September 15th. I think so.
Wow, that's a long time. that's like months from. I thought it was. I thought I got it. I'm going like, yeah, this is to be out next week. Where are you performing anywhere? Are you on tour?
I'm just doing the press tour right now. I have to get the band together.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to be doing as soon as I get back home. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to be doing a U.S. tour and hopefully some other tours. But I'm. You know, I'm kind of doing it with a whole different set of terms, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like with a new label with Mexican Summer, and it's just kind of sort of a new chapter.
Well, that's great. You're one of the people that is never. I mean, never bores you. The music is always exciting, and you're one of the true originals, I think. And it's like it's beautiful to see. It's always nice to see journalists who have to like say like his music is brilliant, even though you don't like his opinions. It's like I just like to watch them twist.
I know, man. I think I subconsciously named this record dedicated to Bobby Jameson just so I could. Not so the first question would be like, so who is Bobby Jameson? And I could basically just talk about Bobby the entire time, and people would never
get to
like, so what was family like, you know, like I mean nobody, as soon as I start talking about me, I my eyes glaze over.
Yeah, because you're too honest, that's your problem.
But also because I don't like thinking or talking about myself.
That's actually, you're in the wrong era then, because that's all people do. It's like you're in the wrong this is the period of
– I should flip it around. I should be listening to their story and every
interview.
Every interview is a missed opportunity.
Yes. Tell me about yourself. Ariel, always a pleasure. I hope to see you later. I got to go do a show. I got to do the 5 at 9 o'clock, but I'm going to try. Maybe I can track you down somewhere.
Thanks, man. It's always great to see you.
Same here, buddy.
All right.
See you.